Are you ready?
Hey, think you could tell us what to do? You think you could tell us what to wear? You think that you're better? Well, you better get ready. Bow to the masses.
Welcome to Unscripted Wrestling, the best wrestling podcast in the whole world. We're definitely here for a controversial episode. I'm your gracious moderator, Daniel Hummer, here with my good friends Eric and Doug. Clintus will be joining us later. How's your week, gentlemen? How you guys doing?
I'm good.
I'm good. Since when are you and I friends?
Yeah, we're just friends at this point. We'll be brothers someday. We'll get there. But make sure to listen to Wrestling with Reality with John. I don't even know if he plugs us anymore, but make sure to listen to the Dirt Sheet Dudes with Boxman and Anthony.
They're actually live right now, so.
Well, like we always say, listen to us first and then check them out.
Exactly.
You know they say the same thing about us.
Well, fuck them. No, I'm just kidding. Listen to the Dirt Sheet Dudes. Is there anybody else you guys want to plug? Just shout out to NWA Power.
Shout out to Cody Rhodes.
No, that's a good, don't you steal that. But because we're starting a new segment here for the first few minutes here. We're going to talk about our favorite wrestler and or favorite, the greatest moment of the week for us in wrestling, because wrestling's so rich right now. There's so much wrestling. So we're going to do that for the first couple of minutes. And then we're going to get into maybe our most controversial episode yet. Mr. Hunter Hearst Helmsley, Triple H, Part 1. So
we're going to get sued.
But here's what I'd like to do, because Triple H is a controversial figure, and the poll was most overrated, right? So for the last... Yes, Clement chose this. He'll be here at 11. But we're going to get into that. We're going to get in our career retrospective. And then the last maybe 15, 10 minutes, instead of summing up the legacy like we usually do, I'd like to talk about why we think he's the most overrated. Because we've
Eric,
been too nice
together.
How
long are we going tonight?
I said it for 2 hours, but if you only can go an hour and a half, that's fine.
Okay, well, we'll see.
Well, there's definitely a lot to get into, so let me know. But,
yep.
Yeah, we've been too nice to guys, so let's be assholes. We'll talk about why he's the most overrated. But first, let's get it. Well, Eric, what was your favorite moment of wrestling this week?
Probably the same as yours. The Cody Rhodes promo.
Cody did have an amazing promo. You watched it 10 times. Yeah. It was awesome. The way he delivered it, the passion, awesome. I'm actually going to go a little different. My favorite, I actually watched NXT yesterday. My favorite match of the week would be Damian Priest versus Pete Dunne. Because that match
really
was awesome.
That.
Yeah. I actually think that was better than any match on Dynamite this week.
Oh, wow.
And I love Dynamite this week. But there's something about Pete Dunne. He's a badass. He's a superstar in the making. And Damian Priest has a lot of potential. How about you, Doug?
I'm interested to see what Doug says.
You both pick really good moments. You both picked moments that I really enjoyed this week. And there was actually a lot to enjoy this week. Wrestling, for once, as a whole, really didn't suck. There was a lot of good things to pick from.
How was SmackDown? I didn't watch it tonight.
I mean, it was okay. That was probably, you know, SmackDown was probably a letdown, but most of the UK shows are. But I think, for me, the best moment this week was the ending to Dynamite and that big-ass brawl.
Okay.
And that was 5 minutes of the most chaotic stuff you could ever see. And it built three it built three matches for the show tomorrow night.
I would agree with that.
And just how Shivani and Excalibur and JR sold the whole thing.
Oh yeah. It was definitely reminiscent of old Nitros back in the day and how they were there.
Yeah. I think that's what they're trying to do. That's why they brought in Tony Schiavone and the new commentary. But I'll ask this question for you guys just real quick before we get started with Mr. Triple H. What are your predictions for the championship match tomorrow?
I want Cody Rhodes to win. As a fan, I want Cody Rhodes to win.
Yeah, I do too. But it's the right thing to do to have Jericho winning.
Yeah, but I don't give a shit. I'm a fan who cheers for the baby faces. Fuck the smart marks. I want Cody Rhodes to win. He sold me. He's the reason I'm buying the fucking pay-per-view. He's doing his job as the baby face, making me spend my hard-earned money. So I want Cody Rhodes to kick Jericho's ass.
Doug?
You look at Cody's promo the other day, and something that he said when he said, when he brought up the names of Eddie Graham and Bill Watts and Dusty Rhodes, three guys that were top guys in their territory, but they were the top guys because they were the bookers of those specific territories. And you look at Cody. Cody is the quote-unquote booker, okay? He's quote-unquote management. And
one of them, yeah.
Now, the thing is that if he were to win the world title, I'm sure, and I've said this before too, Daniel and I have gotten into an argument about it, about how I don't think Cody should win the world title. However, Cody Rhodes is a babyface. All right? And the rule has always stated, now I know the rules have changed because the business has changed because you got the cool heels now. Okay? But you always root for the babyface. Now, I know a lot of the fans of, you know, nowadays, they root for the cool heroes or whoever they think is the coolest or whatever, and a lot of these butt-fucking bastards don't believe in the old wrestling fan philosophy of you root for the babyfaces and you root against the heels. But Cody Rhodes is a babyface. Therefore, I would like to see him win. Now, will he win? I don't think so. But I don't know if I would be mad at him winning. Even though, yes, he is the booker, and it would not be right for him to win, you know, quote-unquote, in some people's eyes, I don't see an issue with it because I do see Cody as somebody that would be willing to put over a younger guy.
Yeah. And that's not to discredit anything Jericho's done. I think Jericho's done maybe not his best work, but up there, Le Champion and a little bit of the bubbly. And he is really trying his best to make this thing work. So whoever wins,
he took four guys that nobody should give a shit about.
I mean, LAX was already well known, so.
Okay, well, no. First of all, Santana and Ortiz, who gives a shit about them? All right, they look like a couple of chihuahuas. All right.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And Sammy Guevara, with that haircut, who gives a shit? And that other, case of testicular cancer. Who gives a rat's ass? But Jericho made people give a shit about those four fuckers. All right, so you can't discredit anything Jericho has done. If it had not been for Jericho, every time those four pieces of shit would be on the TV, I'd turn the fucking channel.
I have a little different stance about that, but that's not really the episode we're getting into today. And, you know, who should win, who should not win? I mean, we are a wrestling podcast, and we do a lot of that when we're talking about the past, but, I mean, that shit bothers me. You know, we watch it to enjoy it. Let them take us. And, I mean, and I try to be the same way for WWE, too, because people are very biased when it comes to WWE and shit all over them for it. But, you know, it's their creation. Let them do what they're going to do it, and then judge it after.
If we get a good wrestling match tomorrow, I don't give a fuck who wins.
Who the fuck are we?
All right, it's just like, you know, going back to, you know, All Out. You know, people bitched about Pac beating Kenny Omega. Guess what? It was a good wrestling match. It was a fantastic wrestling match. You know, yeah, we wanted Kenny Omega to win because he was a babyface, but it was a fantastic wrestling match. I don't give a fuck who won. All right,
and now it seems to be
won.
Working in favor. It seems to make sense now, seeming Pac's character and his program with Paige. I mean, give it a few weeks, guys. You know, not you, but the fans. Give it a few weeks, see where they're going with it, you know. Don't be so quick to judge everything, even though that's pretty much what we do professionally. All right, so let's get into this episode, the meat and potatoes today. Hunter Hearst Helmsley.
Yep.
I'm a little under the weather, so I apologize to the listeners if my voice is a little raspy. But Mr. Helmsley was born in New Hampshire. He first watched wrestling at the age of 5. The first wrestler he's ever seen perform is a man named Chief J. Strongbro. You got a Chief J. Strongbro story, Doug?
I don't know if I have a Chief J. Strongbow story, but Strongbow, he was very much a fixture in the New York area, a lot in the Garden. Actually had quite the battle with, I think him and High Chief Peter Maivia, when Maivia was, did some tours in the New York area. I think those two actually had quite the battle. You know, they battled a little bit. So, but Strongbow, you know, he was good for his day, and he was actually an inspiration to a lot of the Native American wrestlers that would, you know, come into WWE.
Yeah, definitely a legend in the business. So he started going. He really started as a bodybuilder. So, and he's always been a bodybuilder. That's what Triple H is. That's what he started as. But he was always a lifelong wrestling fan. He joined wrestling school, Killer Kowalski School, by that, with a class that also included Perry Saturn and China.
China, yep. Hall of Famer China.
So he was surrounded by some talent. I mean, we'll get into his relationship with China a little later. Now, Triple H is always going to be associated with someone who kind of sleaze their way to the top, right? Do you think that should, which I don't completely agree with. Eric, do you think that should take away all his hard work?
No, because he didn't start dating his wife now until, 2000, 2001? How about his accomplishments for the first seven, 8 years of his career? That's why I look at it.
I don't think anyone should take that away from him, that he is a hard-working son of a bitch, even though maybe some of his tactics, and not just Barry and Stephanie, maybe some of his tactics were a little low. But, Dougie, what was your first...
What about stuck in the dick of Shawn Michaels for so long?
Well, we'll get into that. We'll get into that.
All right, and that's the thing, is that I've got nothing really against Triple H, except for, you know, there were times where I think that, you know, he really fucked over people because he just didn't want to put them over. But I think it's that he doesn't – there are certain people he didn't want to put over because he didn't have faith in them. And so I think that that's the – see, to play devil's advocate here, I think that's the issue. I mean, you could say that Triple H is a selfish piece of shit and, you know, he didn't want to put people over because he wanted to go over himself. No, I think it has to do with the fact that there's certain people he didn't have faith in because he didn't think they could draw.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
I agree with you. But we're not even to his debut yet, so hold your horses. So, debuts in WCW is a young man named Kara Ryzen. Guys, this has to be in the top five worst gimmick names of all time. Doug, what was your earliest memories of terrorizing WCW? You're a big WCW fan.
I don't even think I really watched WCW around this time because this was around my 3-year ban from watching wrestling because I smacked a kid around in elementary school.
This is 94, 95.
Yeah, so I didn't necessarily watch. I mean, I would still because I could actually, you know, sneak it past mom and dad because they're not the brightest bulbs in the shed. You know, so I could actually, like, you know, sneak downstairs and watch it on TV or go to, you know, Nana and Papa's house and watch it on TV there because, you know, Papa always watched it. But as far as, like, my first recollection of him in WCW, I want to say it was a match he had with Larry Zbyszko while Larry Zbyszko was television champion. And then, which was, that was back around 94. And then, you know, not that long after that, they renamed him John Paul Levesque.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, that's his real name. Yeah, real name, right?
No.
Oh.
Well, Paul Levesque is his name.
Yeah.
They called him John Paul Levesque because they tried to make him sound like a French guy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's right. He's not even French.
Well, it's a French name.
Yeah.
But, so, to go back to terrorizing real quick, even though we won't spend a lot of time there, this is when Kevin Nash has spoke that him and the boys in the locker room used to watch WCW to laugh at how bad it was. And one of the guys they really took a liking to was terrorizing. So maybe this was the start of what, I mean, it's become a lifelong friendship between Nash and Triple H. And it kind of started there. So,
well, here's the thing, too. Diamond Dallas Page was there at the time. Diamond Dallas Page, good friends with Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, and he was also friends with Triple H, you know, back in WCW. Like, they would hang out, they would train together. So you got to think that Page was kind of, you know, calling Hall and Nash and saying, hey, look, you know, we got this guy, you know. I'm sure Paige put in a good word for Hunter when he got to the WWF. Because, you know, Diamond Dallas Page is a stooge.
I like DDP, but...
I love DDP.
But maybe some stooge tendencies he does have. So, when he's doing this French gimmick, right, this is when he really develops the finishing move, the pedigree. And we've seen many, many people get buried, so to speak, by the pedigree. So it started this early, and it's crazy that he never switched up this finishing maneuver. It was always the pedigree from this point on.
Well, no. When he first debuted for the WWF, they had him use the diamond cutter. But then Paige called him and said, hey, can you not use that? You know, that's kind of my move. So then he switched back to the pedigree.
Oh, okay.
Well, I think it turned out to be a... So he didn't give a shit about Randy Orton?
Oh, this is before Randy Orton's time. I mean, at this time, Randy Orton was only 15 years old.
Well, I know that. But he changed stances about someone taking his move?
Well, he wasn't really wrestling around the time when Orton came in and started using the RKO. And plus, you know, you had to think at that time nobody was really going to listen to him.
Yeah. And his move was Randy's finisher changed for a bit when you used to do the, what is it called? The stomp? Not the curb stomp.
The punt?
Yeah.
Oh,
punt.
No, either the punt or the Garvin stomp, which he used for a while.
And then he went back to RKO after they abandoned it or whatever. Did they ban it? Is that what happened?
What, the punt?
I think he just stopped doing it.
Well, yeah, because it looked like it was giving guys concussions.
So back to Levesque here. He had one of the bright spots that I remember. Was his little feud with Alex Wright, which is crazy to think of a guy who's main evented WrestleMania, who's been in some of the biggest programs of all time. Humble beginnings here, right, Doug?
Well, yeah. And here's the thing is that they were trying to build Alex Wright clean-cut babyface. Okay? And I'm being serious. Like, at this time, 18 years old, clean-cut babyface, good-looking kid. You know, they thought they had some money in here because he was a great athlete. You know, he could move. He's very athletic. But the problem was he couldn't speak English. And here's the thing. They got this guy, Levesque, who they're building as this French guy, but he couldn't speak French. A French guy that doesn't know the language and a guy you're trying to build as a top babyface, yet you can't understand what the fuck he's saying.
So this is definitely an in-ring heavy feud.
It's an in-ring heavy feud. This feud was not based on the promos. Okay?
No.
This feud was basically, they used it, the wrestling is what mattered here. All right, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with a wrestling heavy feud. As long as both guys can go. And by the way, both guys could go. It was actually the best match of that Starrcade pay-per-view.
94?
You think so?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to go back and watch that though. Triple H versus Alex Wright.
John Paul Levesque versus Alex Wright, yeah.
Well, it definitely beat the fuck out of Hogan versus the Butcher, I'll tell you that much. But, I'd rather get hit by a fucking bus than watch that match again. But, he does, shortly after that is when he forms a tag team with, William Regal, Lord Stephen Regal at the time. Similar character. High-class British guy. Didn't last very long. You have any real moments of seeing them as a tag team, Doug?
Not really. I mean, because it was right after that where, I know they teamed for a little bit, but they didn't stick together very long because then Regal formed the Blue Bloods with Robert the Earl of Eaton.
Bobby.
Which, you know, yeah, Bobby Eaton, but that's what they called him. They called him Robert the Earl of Eaton, which you talk about somebody that, you know, does not belong with a British gimmick, try a guy from Alabama. I swear, like, Regal, they must have hated Regal back then. You pick, and just follow me on this a little bit. First, you give him Sir William Dundee as a manager. Sir William Dundee, by the way, is Bill Dundee from Memphis, Tennessee. But, you know, Dundee also is Australian. But, all right, so he's Australian, but, you know, he lived in Memphis. So, you know, a lot of his Australian accent kind of went away. But you give him that first, and then you give him a French guy that can't speak French. And then you give him Bobby Eaton from Huntsville, Alabama, and they're trying to turn Bobby Eaton into a British guy. Did Regal sleep with Bischoff's wife or something?
Well, DDP did, right?
Well, yeah, DDP did, but, you know, DDP got rewarded for it.
He did,
but,
that's like, what the fuck?
So, ladies and gentlemen, this is actually the end of the episode. His WCW run. We'll get into the WWE run next week. No, I'm just kidding. But this was the highlighted WCW career of John Paul Levesque, because he leaves shortly after because he wants to be a singles. And he's already making demands. Already making demands this young. Do you think that he was a little
arrogant?
Maybe a little arrogant for not really paying his dues yet.
Yes.
I think you could call it arrogance, you could call it confidence. I mean, he was confident in his ability.
Yeah, but he really wasn't shit yet.
There was a lot of guys in that period of time that were not ready for big spots.
But were they making demands like this?
Well, first of all, the wrestling business is full of people bitching like little babies making demands. Look at some of the fuckers now.
Yeah. They usually have bigger names attached to them, though. All right, so he comes into WWE, and here comes another demand. Because he starts his career as Hunter Hearst Helms, right? The Connecticut Blue Blood. Apparently, his first... J.J. Dillon gave him the name of Reginald DuPont Helmsley. But Levesque asked for a name to play with the first letters, and management agreed with him. But already another demand from Triple H when he really isn't even started yet. I mean, it's not really a demand, it's just a suggestion. But how many other guys get so much liberty with their character, Doug? Especially around this time.
Well, it's really just a tweak. I mean, around this time, you got to go back and you got to look at some of the gimmicks in 1995. You had a hog farmer. You had a race car driver. You had a garbage man. You had a mantar. You know, you had a clown. You had, head shrinkers. You know, I mean, the list goes on and on. You had all these gimmicks. Some of them worked. Some of them didn't. And, you know, but the thing is that what makes a character work is if you're invested in it. And if you're going to invest in it, you should be able to kind of tweak it a little bit.
I think Clint and Fresh joined us.
Hello?
What's up,
Clint? Hello,
hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
All right, go ahead, Doug.
I'm good.
But the thing is that if you're going to be invested in a character, I think you should have a little bit of input. So I don't have an issue with him saying, with him wanting to tweak the character a little.
Right. And so Clint, just to catch up here, we're getting into Triple H's early days in WWE as the Connecticut Blue Blood, Hunter Hearst Helmsley. Do you have any first moments of seeing him when he first came in?
I will say when I first remember Triple H, when I was, I guess, going into WrestleMania 13, when he challenged, when he was like the surprise opponent for Ultimate Warrior.
Right. That would be 12, by the way.
Oh, okay, 12. Okay, sorry. I know it was one of the WrestleManias.
We'll get into that debacle in a little bit.
Shortly. We'll get into that shortly. But he appears in some vignettes where he's talking about proper etiquette. And he makes his debut on an episode of the Wrestling Challenge, defeating Buck Zumhoff, or whatever the fuck his name is, Doug.
Oh, Buck Zumhoff. Don't get me started on that piece of garbage. Wow.
Elaborate.
Huh?
Elaborate.
Wow.
I know what you're talking about, but elaborate.
He's a pedophile. Right now, he's serving a life sentence in jail because he couldn't keep his... And I'm going to get in trouble for saying it like this, but it's the name of our show, so fuck it. He's serving a life sentence right now because he couldn't keep his dick out of his daughter.
Okay. Wow. So Helmsley makes his WWF debut at SummerSlam, where he beats a slightly more respectable human being, Bob Holly. You remember watching this match, Doug?
Oh, this was actually... For a SummerSlam that sucked, this was actually one of the highlights for me because I actually like both guys.
Really?
Well, and I'll say this. I have no problem with Bob Holly. I'm actually a huge Bob Holly fan, okay? Somebody just have a heart attack? After I just said that? But no, I'm a huge Bob Holly fan, and I think because Bob Holly, he was kind of in that like upper mid card. He was, you know, he was one of the more established names because he had been around for a while. And the fact that he put over Helmsley,
yeah.
I think it was a good move. And the match, like it was like a 5 to 6 minute match. It wasn't like a fan. It wasn't a Matt Classic or anything like that. But it did its job. Its job was to get Helmsley over.
Right.
Exactly.
It was pretty much his biggest match to that date, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
So then he starts his infamous feud with Henry Godwin, right? Were you invested into this feud, Eric?
No.
Okay.
Not really. I mean,
well,
I think it's one of the first feuds I've seen him wrestle in.
Well, I think everybody remembers the Hog Pen match.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Not really up there with an Iron Man match or a Hell in a Cell. Not really one of the greatest stipulations in the history of wrestling. But what do you remember about the Hog Pen match, Clemens?
I don't remember much about the Hog Pen match, to tell you the truth.
Was that the only one in history?
No.
I think so.
There was one more. Was that with Stephanie McMahon and Vicky Guerrero?
No, that was with Vicky Guerrero and Santina Marella.
Oh,
those of
yeah,
you not keeping score, Santina Marella was Santino in drag.
No, it was his sister.
Oh, wait, you be.
I think he played his own sister, twin sister.
Yeah.
Want to get technical about it?
So, Doug, do you think this kind of made Godwin as a face, you know, putting the heel? Who won again? Because I haven't seen this in so long.
I think Hunter won, but afterwards he did take a dive into the hog pen.
Right.
If you go back and watch this, first of all, this pay-per-view, which I think was called Season's Beatings. It was basically.
No, I think it was In Your House. It was just another. It was a In Your House.
Yeah, it was In Your House. It was In Your House Season's Beatings. It was an In Your House pay per view, but they called it Season's Beatings because each In Your House pay per view had like its own little tagline or whatever.
Oh, wow.
I think on the. I know on the network they just listed from like 95 as 1, 2, 3. He never advertised it as his own In Your House meeting until like 96 or. All
right. Well, anyway, you know, we could argue about this for a while, but anyway.
Yeah. No. Anyway.
So, at this In Your House pay per view, like it was built basically on one match. Like, Brett versus Bulldog was the one selling the pay-per-view, but they had, like, their own little gimmick, you know, they had other gimmick matches that were going to happen, and the pay-per-view really wasn't that great, but this match actually wasn't as bad. Like, it was actually, like, when they actually got in there and wrestled, when they wrestled in the ring for a while, the match wasn't that horrible. The match was actually pretty good. And the fact that Godwin and Helmsley, they proved themselves to be two good hands. And Godwin really got over as a babyface.
Yeah. So, Helmsley kind of took a downturn in his career after that, right? He starts to... very low profile feuds with Duke the Dumpster Drosay, which isn't known as not really known as the best gimmick in the history of professional wrestling. And he jobbed to him. So
now hold on, it was a reverse decision. Helmsley never put him over clean, it was a reverse decision. And then
what,
he
the
beat
Rumble?
Him at the next pay per view. Yeah. But then he beat him at the February In Your House pay-per-view.
Okay. But still not really a huge profile feud.
Oh, no, it was horrible.
No.
I mean, the fact that I wonder who he pissed off.
I mean, we'll get to him pissing people off and jobbing later, but... You know, you think about a guy who was infused with The Rock and Steve Austin, and when we're talking about now, he just went from a hog farmer to a garbage man. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But going into...
Right?
Yeah, gotta do what you gotta do. But I don't know about for wrestling, though, if the garbage man really... It might work today. I could see AEW making it work, but. So we're talking about WrestleMania, and his feud is with the Ultimate Warrior, which is funny because the Triple H is kind of known for putting himself over young guys and burying people, right? And we'll definitely get into that later, especially why he's overrated. And, he's known for doing that. But this is a classic example of it happening to him, right? You got a young up-and-coming talent, and really, he's just getting squashed by an old has-been.
Well, all right. Let me just kind of try to put this in perspective here. He's a young guy. He's undefeated. He's on top of the world, even though, you know, a lot of the guys he's beat, I mean, he beat a race car driver. At a SummerSlam, He beat a hog farmer in a hog pen match at an In Your House. He beat a trash man at another In Your House. He's also beaten a clown on an episode of Raw. All right, and now here he is. He's going against one of the guys that was, you know, a huge fixture back in the early 90s. All right, and this is supposed to be a big match for him. But Vince bringing back the Ultimate Warrior, you're not going to bring back the Warrior. And, you know, the ego that the Warrior has, and I don't mean to speak ill of the dead, because God forbid, if his widow is listening to this, I'll probably get fucking roasted on Twitter. So I'm not going to speak ill of the dead here, but knowing the ego that the Warrior has, the Warrior's coming in, the Warrior's going to expect to be put on top right away. And that means going over one of the young guys, and he's got to do it in Warrior fashion.
Yeah.
Because that's what the Warrior does.
Now,
unfortunately, it was Helmsley that was picked.
Yeah.
Do you think it was the right move, or?
I mean, I think, you know, bringing Warrior back, obviously it had to go down, you know, in typical Warrior fashion. Should it have been Helmsley being the one to put him over? I'm going to say probably not. They could have found somebody else to do it. But I don't know of anybody else that would have done it. But because Helmsley was a company guy, and, you know, he had the click watching his back, you know, he probably figured that he was going to get rewarded for it in the end.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I do remember something about that, this feud that he did talk about earlier on. I do remember Triple H saying, I'm going to go way off topic here with this. But, yeah, I remember before he took Sheamus on, and Sheamus challenged him to WrestleMania, he brought out the fact that Sheamus was walking, doing the same thing he did back in his young career. He felt that at the time that he he was on top of the world, but it took a man to knock him up, took down to earth. Let's put it that way. Like, he was really feeling himself going into that Warrior match. Like, he was really on top of the world, and he didn't realize that everything was crashing down right after that match with the Warrior.
Right. Yeah.
Because he didn't really seem the same right after that match at WrestleMania, because it was like such a squash match. Okay, he didn't really become really relevant until after he started teaming with Shawn Michaels. Like, yes.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a couple controversial things that happen here after that, but you are right. The storyline leading up to this is that he's coming to the ring with a different valet, right? With Playboy Playmates.
Right.
And I think that's an actually cool storyline, because he's coming out with a different hot chick every time. And Sable was his manager for this. But then when he loses, he starts taking it out on her, kind of being a dick. And this is where we see Mark Merrill come out, her husband. And it kind of starts a program between them. What'd you think about that, Doug?
About the program between the two of them?
Yeah.
I actually liked it, because I thought they had good chemistry together. Because Helmsley could play off as, the heel, and the very arrogant heel, and, you know, he knew how to take charge in the ring, how to be a ring general, and Merrill was good for a lot of the flippy stuff. You know, he's another very athletic guy. And he just, you know, Mero was very charismatic. Unfortunately, though, he was not allowed to be the charismatic person he was in WCW, because in WCW he had the Johnny B. Badd gimmick, which, you know, that's another story for another episode. But I mean, Mark Mero, like when he came in, you know, he had, you know, such a following behind him, and it continued throughout for this feud with Helmsley. But afterwards, it went downhill pretty quick.
Right. And so he gets into some controversy here. On June 1st, 1996, he's on an episode of Superstars. You remember this, Doug? With a guy named Marty Garner.
I remember hearing about it.
He went to do the pedigree. Garner thought he was going to do a suplex, double underhook suplex, and he tried to jump up with the move. But it made Garner land on the top of his head and suffer serious neck damage. Later on, he went to sue the WWF, and they settled out of court. Would you put this one on the guy or Triple H?
I put it on I would put it on Hunter, because if the guy thought he was going to get hit with a double arm underhook suplex, that's when Hunter should say, "No, dude, I'm going to hit you with the pedigree."
Right. And that can really do some damage if you think about that.
Well, remember what happened to you?
Well, yeah, that was slightly smaller.
When I tried to pedigree you?
Wow. Yeah. But, So we get into let's get into the curtain call incident, because that happens around this time. And a lot of people, so to put context into it, two guys were leaving that night. This is a big show in Madison Square Garden, one of WWF's mainstays. Kevin Nash and Scott Hall were
96.
They were going to leave. They were leaving right after this, right? Going to WCW. Shawn Michaels and Triple H were obviously going to stay. And the Click. Well, let's get into some Click stories, too, before this. Do you remember hearing any big Click stories of them influencing creative or just being dicks, Doug?
I heard a lot of them being dicks, but also I remember, you know, because I remember that they, you know, harassed some guys. And, you know, I think we talked about in the Bam Bam Bigelow episode that they were the big reason why Bigelow left the WWF at that time.
Right.
Because he couldn't stand being around them anymore.
Wow.
So, I mean, you know, I heard they were dicks. You know, there's the story out there that Jean-Pierre Lafitte, or as we know him now, PCO, he was being harassed by them, and they wanted him gone, so, you know, he was ended up gone. But it's just basically those guys just kind of basically saying, "Hey, look, you know, we're the standard bearers around here." But then you have Undertaker's group basically being like, "You tell us what to do, we're going to beat the fuck out of you."
BSK, right?
Yeah, the Bone Street Crew. And then, which you don't want to mess with those fuckers. I mean, Undertaker, Fatu, both Godwins, Yokozuna. Like, Yoko, I don't know of anybody that would want to mess with Yokozuna. If they do, I mean, the guy could sit on you and break both your hips.
He can do more than that.
I was paraphrasing.
No, I agree with you, though. Yokozuna was a badass. So these guys have a reputation, right? They're really the only guys that can influence Vince. Because Shawn
right.
Michaels has always been Vince's boy. And these are his buddies, X-Pac included, and loosely included Justin Incredible. But that's very loosely. But
right.
So you have the curtain call incident. So these guys are leaving, but before they leave, what was the match, Doug? Kevin Nash versus Shawn?
Yeah, it was Diesel versus Shawn. I think it was inside of a steel cage.
All right. Shawn goes over. The face beats the heel. Or maybe
right.
the other way around. And then all four guys get in the ring and hug each other. This has been universally panned by many. Jim Cornette says it's the worst thing to ever happen in the wrestling business. Clintus, how do you take it? People breaking kayfabe, faces and heels, hugging in the same ring. At the time.
I enjoyed it. I mean, it showed you the closeness that, yes, it's scripted, but at the same time, that we all care about each other. We might act like we hate each other, but deep inside, we all care. And seeing a tight group of friends like that, like Shawn, Diesel, Razor Ramon, S-Pop. I can't get much closer to that. Because I think that's how you get over with the fans. If you're able to work with somebody, team with them, knows the ins and outs, best friends, you're going to be able to put on great shows and great matches together. Either tag team or just going one-on-one. That's how you build chemistry.
How do you feel about it, Doug?
All right, so I kind of feel like this about it. I didn't necessarily understand it at the time, like what the big deal was. I mean, well, at the time, you know, I kind of felt, because I was younger, I was just like, you know what? Oh, well, why are, you know, good guys hugging bad guys? Because I really didn't understand it. But, you know, they were friends. I mean, nobody bitched after that one. And, Clintus, you've actually talked about this before because you talked about how much you liked that takeover. Remember the Sasha and Bayley match where they went to 30 minutes?
The
Iron Woman match. The 30-minute match at the takeover. Remember afterwards they were hugging each other and all that shit?
Yeah.
Did anybody bitch then?
Oh. I mean, not only that, you can go to Brooklyn. When she actually beat Sasha for the title, all four of them came out.
That is a different time, though, right, guys? I mean, we're in a totally different era than they were back then. That was unheard of back then.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, but if you want to compare it to what is going on then to now, then
I agree with you.
I mean, I'm just saying. I just think it's it, like, you know, I mean, back then, obviously, it wasn't as commonplace as it could be now, you know, because it wasn't heard of back then. And I know a lot of guys were upset because kayfabe was still, you know, still meant something back then. But to those guys, it really didn't, because those guys, they wanted to usher a new, you know, a new era into the business.
Right. And I don't really think it was even that deep. I think they were just four friends that wanted to hug each other goodbye. But it got received the way it got received.
It goes to show you they're human too.
Right.
Right. So the narrative that's always been in place was Hunter was supposed to win the King of the Ring that year. That was the plan. He was going to win the King of the Ring and get this big push and go do a feud against Shawn Michaels. But that didn't happen because Vince had to punish somebody. Because even though Vince originally said, this is cool, you guys can do that, he got a lot of backlash. So someone had to get punished, right? Shawn Michaels is the champion, so they're not going to punish him. I mean, we've all heard this story. Nash and Hall left, so how the fuck can you punish them? So Hunter, who was the lowest on the totem pole, he got punished. And they took that away from him. I mean, obviously it was a great decision because the guy that ended up winning the King of the Ring became Stone Cold Steve Austin, the biggest draw ever. Do you think this was the right move, or do you think he really didn't deserve to be punished? Clintus.
Okay. The way I look at it like this, Triple H did say, I think when he was on Austin's podcast or whatever, he did say that he wasn't for it, but he felt that, and he told Austin that to himself, that if he would have won that King of the Ring and watched it, what Austin went through afterwards, that he felt that he probably wouldn't be able to handle the kind of success that was going to come away winning that year, King of the Ring, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
So in a way, I think he was kind of like happy that he did not go do it.
Yeah.
Go through.
Got to, I agree with that.
I agree too. He has gone on record and said he would have dropped the ball in 96. But people act like the WWE act like he just lost his push and he became a jobber after that. But they forget to add, Doug, that he won the Intercontinental Championship shortly after that, beating Mark Mero.
Yeah, it was only like 4 months after that. And that was when he was supposed to wrestle it was the night he was supposed to wrestle Mr. Perfect, and it was being billed. That episode of Raw, it was being billed as a night of returns. Bret Hart was going to come back and let everybody know what he was going to do, or, you know, if he was going to stay or if he was going to go to WCW. Kurt Hennig was coming back after not being in the ring for 3 years. And, you know, he had this big comeback and, you know, it was going to be him versus Helmsley, and that ended up not happening. Mainly, I think, because Hennig, I think, knew he wanted to go somewhere else. And it just, you know, it just didn't work out that way. So, yeah, so Helmsley ended up winning the Intercontinental title that night. And so this whole big thing where he's going to get punished and he had to eat shit for a year or whatever the fuck, you know, he wasn't going to get the King of the Ring push. But guess what? He got the Intercontinental title.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's not exactly shit.
He held it for about 4 months.
Not bad. Not bad for the first round.
He dropped it to a pretty big name, too. But,
And with the Rock?
Yes.
Well, yeah, Rocky Maivia.
With Rock, yeah.
I saw that match recently.
Was that SummerSlam?
It was an episode of Raw.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember the date, but yeah, it was an episode of Raw. So
February 13th, 1997.
Okay.
Thank you, Doug.
So there you go.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I mean, eating shit and all that, and maybe for a few months he did, and he did some jobs to Mick Foley or whatever. But an Intercontinental Champion, I mean, I know it's not the main event, but not bad.
I mean, IC title meant something back in the 90s.
Right. So, I don't think that is bad, you know? It's not like he was wrestling first match of the night against the Dumpster Drossy again. You know, he's still in pretty high-profile feuds.
Exactly.
you know, look at what he did. You know, he worked several matches against Mark Merrill. He worked several matches against Goldust.
And we'll get into that. So why don't you transition to that, Doug, the WrestleMania feud and everything at WrestleMania 13?
Him and Goldust had a hell of a feud because there were two guys that could work, and they worked well with each other.
For people who don't know who Goldust is, it's Dustin Rhodes.
Yes.
If anybody doesn't know who Goldust is, they're dumber than us.
That's what I was going to say. Whoever doesn't know that is living under a fucking rock.
All right.
I mean, there's probably some new wrestling fans, so you never know. There could be 10-year-old listening to us.
If they don't know who Goldust is, they're dumber than Waterman.
That's pretty fucking dumb. That guy's a jackass. But at WrestleMania 13, he beats Goldust.
Did Clintus tell
us
to go fuck off, or is he still there?
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
I haven't heard you for a couple of minutes.
Well, you guys are talking. I didn't want to interrupt you.
That's true. So, Clintus, when you see China debut and this big woman, which, I mean, and
oh,
she's
yeah.
his bodyguard, what do you think about that?
I think it opened my eyes to what anybody can do. Having a woman play as your bodyguard, who's built nearly like a man, who's willing to step into the ring and take on a man himself, it's amazing.
Yeah,
that's true. But were they dating at this point, Doug?
I don't think they were dating at this point yet. I know they were. I don't think they actually started dating until 98.
Okay.
How long did they date for?
Almost 3 years.
About a year.
They were together almost 3 years.
Oh wow. Were they that serious that they almost got married or something?
Yes, they were engaged.
And
oh wow, that's right.
Good daughter. So this is where we get into the fun part, and we're only gonna go on his career for about 10 more minutes. Because we're ending at 12, I talked to Eric. And then, for about 10 more minutes, and then we're going to get into why or why we don't think he's overrated. If that's cool with you guys.
Yeah.
So we'll have a little bit of a debate there. But this is the fun part, because this is when he starts DX. And we're all fans of the Attitude Era, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is really where it started. Do you think this is where he really gets to come into his own here, Clintus, as part of DX?
I think so.
Yeah, he was working with Shawn Michaels.
He went
I really
having King of the Ring. Go ahead, Doug.
I mean, I was going to say, I think that if you really talk to him, he does have a sense of humor. And it's like one of those sense of humors that like he could be a real sarcastic guy. And he could be, you know, he's got that sarcasm where it almost makes him sound like a dick. And I think I was just going to say, him and I would probably get along.
I was going to mention you, Doug. That's why I said sounds familiar.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, him and I would actually probably get along, even though he's probably going to end up suing us for this episode.
No, I think Triple H would love us.
That's a step
at least
up,
you
right?
Have high hopes.
Oh, I'm not going to talk shit about that.
I could sit down and have a beer with Triple H.
I'd piss in his beer. Fuck Triple H. But
what the fuck?
Yeah, fuck
wow.
Triple H.
Wow.
AEW. But, well, there goes my career in the fucking business, huh? Fuck Triple H. But,
well,
so he's, no, I'm just kidding. I don't give a shit. But he, this is when he starts saying suck it and, you know, doing the crotch chop. And this is when his career takes off. He beats King of the Ring in the, or he doesn't beat, he beats Mankind in the finals of the King of the Ring. And this is what was supposed to happen to him last year, but it's happened to him this year. And now he's doing good.
He was 98. Yeah, 98.
Yeah. No, 97 still. But do
97.
He's doing good for himself. But do you still just see him as Shawn Michaels' sidekick at this point, Doug?
When he first joined DX, yeah. I mean, I think
yeah.
he was more of, you know, he was the insurance policy for Shawn Michaels to make sure that Shawn, you know, won his matches or whatever. I mean, you never really saw Shawn interfere on his behalf. You know, Shawn
yeah.
was the star. Hunter was the guy that, you know, Hunter was his backup. But then, you know, later on, you could see that Hunter didn't need Shawn.
Yeah. When Shawn had to retire.
Yeah.
Yeah, when Shawn had to retire, that's when you saw Triple H emerge. That's the star. Because he had his feud with The Rock and Stone Cold. We're right away to excellent.
What about when he first joined DX? The feud he started with Commissioner Slaughter. What's up?
Yeah, I forgot
about
that one.
The boot camp match?
Yeah.
I actually have to go back. I've never actually seen that pay-per-view.
Didn't that happen in SummerSlam? I thought it was a SummerSlam pay-per-view. What was
no,
that?
The boot camp match?
Or
that
was that
at
Ground Zero?
No, that was at that In Your House Degeneration X. It was at the same pay-per-view that was headlined with Shamrock and Shawn Michaels.
Ah, okay. It was after November. This is in...
Yeah.
This is December.
December.
Do you guys think that when you talk about great Attitude Era gimmicks and you got to put in Rock and Stone Cold, do you think DX is in the top five?
I don't say so.
Top three.
I don't think he's in the top five.
I say top three.
I think that, you know, I would say top five because, you know, obviously you got to put Austin up there. You got to put Rock up there. You know, Undertaker, because Undertaker evolved in the Attitude Era. You got to put Kane up there. Huh?
Badass Taker
No, he was still the Ministry of Darkness Undertaker.
Oh, that one was definitely.
Okay. And then you have to put Kane up there, but yeah, then you could put DX.
Yeah.
Mankind.
NWO.
Mankind, and then, you know, you had the mid-card gimmicks like Val Venus and the Godfather.
Yeah.
Gold Dust,
you know, other guys that were underrated. You had, you know, Bradshaw, who was a fucking pissed-off Texan.
That's actually a great idea. We should do a gimmick show. A top ten gimmicks. Favorite gimmicks. One day.
See, there you go. Might have to get into that someday. But,
yeah.
So, yeah, DX definitely has a legacy. You know, I think it's been overdone since then.
It's our intro.
But, it was our intro. So, the Montreal screw job happens, and this isn't a Shawn Michaels or a Bret Hart episode, so we're not going to get into that. A lot of people, you know, well, it's actually on record that Triple H is one of the guys who's like, if Bret Hart's not going to let you go over, we're going to make you go over. Do you think Triple H is right or wrong in that, Clintus?
I think he was right. I mean, at the time, you're talking about Bret Hart taking and doing the same thing Medusa did with the women's title back in the day, and taking the title to WCW the next night on Nitro.
Right.
And I think that's one reason why the screw job happened. You did not want to see another title get trashed before your rival promotion, too.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with that. So he starts a feud with Owen Hart. And, Doug, you and me have had this conversation many times. After the whole Montreal screw job, I think Owen Hart should have really feuded with Shawn Michaels, because I think he could have been one of the hottest baby faces at the time because people were pissed off. What did you think about his little feud with Hart?
I didn't like it, and I didn't like it because I felt like Hunter really – this is one of those instances where you could say that Hunter didn't want to do the job for Owen. And
yeah.
Because if you really look at it, how did Owen win the European title? He won the European title by beating Goldust, who was dressed up as Triple H. Okay? That's how he won the title. Hunter never did a job for Owen. And I think that was a slap in the face. And that's actually where, you know, you could say that Hunter was a no-good bastard. You know,
really?
Because
he refused,
you know, I don't know if he actually refused or not, but the fact that he never did a clean job for Owen, I think sucks, because it was, you know, it made it such a one-sided feud, even though the matches were good, but I think Owen really got fucked over.
Okay.
And
right here is where we'll kind of stop the career retrospective and get into, is Triple H overrated or not? We got about 15 minutes, a little over that here. Who here thinks that Triple H is overrated? I mean, obviously, Clint Dunks, because he picked him.
Okay. I'll give you a reason why I would say Triple H was overrated. I would think overrated. I would think more back. And people will say maybe it's because he's married in the McMahon family. But I would think it was more when Eric Bischoff took over to Raw and gave him that world title. And, like, I think Bischoff forced Triple H to be overrated where he didn't really need to be. It wasn't the fact that he was married into the McMahon family and that's when he got his fame. You have to realize, he didn't marry Stephanie until 2003. He got married on screen in 99. But he didn't really marry into that family until, like, 2003. So that's all story about me.
Yeah.
And the fact that Bischoff was just forced Triple H on him, forced everybody on him. It was like, once Bischoff came to Raw and gave him the world title, when Brock Lesnar decided to be a full-time SmackDown only person, and just handed him the title, it was just like, this is where I want to build my career around, Triple H. I think Bischoff was the one that made it, forced everybody like on to Triple H. They really need to be.
Yeah,
I think if it wasn't for Shawn Michaels being on Raw, if Michaels was on SmackDown, I think Bischoff will never have forced everybody. That whole Triple H scenario would never have gone a totally different career.
Now, do you think he got the title because he married into the McMahon family?
I don't think so. See, a lot of people think that he became a 14-time champion because he's a part of the Big Man family. I don't really think so. A lot of that did come with Big Man hard work and dedication, like you said before. I mean, the feuds that he had with Randy Orton, John Cena. Even when he first won the title, going over and being Mankind and being the accomplice of the undercover accomplice of running over Stone Cold Steve Austin. I mean, Triple H didn't wrestle. Can't wrestle. It wasn't like the whole, his first title run happened when he was with DX. It's not like he didn't happen right after he married into or played the storyline villain of the Big Man in Hell Yeah. The blood with DX.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Triple H, I think a lot of people, and Doug, I'm excited to see your takes on this. Because when you talk about 2002 Raw, right, what Clinton was just saying about Bischoff giving him the title, one of my favorite periods, but you couldn't even watch around this time, right? Because you were so sick of Triple H and Evolution.
I think here's my take on it. He gets handed the world title, which I really did not have a problem with at first. But then, you know, he works with Rob Van Dam. He beats Rob Van Dam because he has he has Ric Flair in the corner, and Flair's always there helping him out or whatever. And it's just like, it just got so tiring. And this is actually where I really started to hate Ric Flair. And I really started to think that Ric Flair was so overrated because all he did was woo, chop, and grab crotch. But like with Triple H to me is he's overrated, I think, because of the fact that 2003 to 2004, it was all about him. Even when Chris Benoit was holding the world title, even when Goldberg was holding the fucking title, it was all about Triple H. And I think that's where, like, business started to go down south. But the thing is that nobody could really say anything to him, say anything to Vince, because every time somebody tried to point it out in the meeting, said, hey, look, you know, you want to know why business is down, it's because this fucker won't go away from the main event picture.
Yeah.
Because he won't disappear. He is a boil on the ass that we can't pop.
Even if he's about Batista too.
Yeah, exactly. It's like this fucker won't go away. And when people finally were just like, fuck it, you know, that's actually what happened to Pat Patterson in 2004. Pat Patterson was asked by Vince, go find out why numbers are down, why ratings are down, why house show attendance sucks. And Pat Patterson went into this meeting and basically said, even though Triple H and Stephanie were in the meeting, Pat Patterson basically said, you want to know why? Or you want to know why, you know, business is down? It's because of the big nose. The big nose guy right there. He won't put anybody over. So he's the reason why the numbers are down. All right. And that actually forced Patterson, you know, because then Hunter made Patterson's life a living hell. So that ended up forcing Pat Patterson to quit the WWE for a while. And the thing is that Hunter always tries, you know, he has input. Even back then, even in the late 90s, he had input. You know, there's a story going around that he actually tried to derail the Rock's push. And which is WrestleMania 50. WrestleMania 15. Triple H and Shawn Michaels wanted it to be, or supposedly, this is, well, there's two different stories. One story is that they wanted it to be Austin versus Rock. Another story was they wanted it to be Austin versus Foley versus Rock. They didn't want Austin and Rock to have the one-on-one. But and they were pushing for Foley. But it
really?
Depends on who
you
believe.
That.
If you believe them, or because Vince Russo tells a story that it was supposed to be Foley, but then Shawn Michaels got in Austin's ear and said, no, you don't want to go into WrestleMania main event against Foley. You know, you want to go against Rock. Fuck Foley. And then Austin, you know, said, you know, went up and said, hey, look, you know, it's got to be me versus Rock, or, you know, whatever the fuck. But Hunter always had a voice.
Still
and,
does, obviously.
Well, yeah. He always had a voice. He always had a voice. And even, like, at one point, you know, he didn't think Kurt Angle was going to be believable. And then Jerry Briscoe stood up to him and said, if you don't think he's believable, why don't you challenge him to a shoot fight and see if he doesn't beat your ass? And he never doubted Kurt Angle again. So as far as him being overrated, he's overrated to the point to where there were certain guys he didn't want to put over. And I don't think it's – and like I said earlier, it's because of the fact that I don't think he believed in them. And he didn't believe in them because he believed more in himself. It goes back to earlier, the point I made about, you know, with Cody Rhodes' promo where he talked about the bookers always putting themselves over. The bookers believed in themselves. They didn't believe in a lot of these guys that came down, that came into the territory, that were making money. They believed more than in they believed more in themselves.
Yeah.
And yes, it's a good way to be, but also it's just like you have to have faith in other people, not just yourself, because nobody's gonna want to see you be champion in your territory for 25 fucking years. You're going to have to drop the title eventually.
To me, Triple H is always going to be known, right, as a guy who was never the main guy, even if he pushed himself as the main guy, even if WWE pushed him as the main guy. In the Attitude Era, did anyone pay a ticket to see Triple H? No. They paid a ticket to see Stone Cold beat the shit out of Triple H. They paid a ticket to see Triple H versus The Rock.
Or Mick
but
Foley.
That's effective heel work, too. Or Mick Foley. But I don't really take that against him. You know, a lot of people say that. Even people bought a ticket later on to see Cena beat up Triple H or whatever. That he was never the main draw. I think that's okay, though. I mean, when you're in creative, just like what we said about Cody, right? When you're in creative, and Triple H has always been in creative, at least for the past 20 years, and you're also on top, you're going to get drawback from it. You're going to get fallout, and you're going to get people that say you don't deserve it. Whether or not you deserve it or not, who knows? I do think Triple H was over at some point. If you pay to see him get his ass kicked, then I think you're an effective heel.
Exactly.
But go ahead, Eric.
I would say he's overhyped at times. He was overhyped at times, like, during that period where he was handed the title on the silver platter, and for over what 2-3 years it was always about him with the world title. If he didn't have it, he had to have rematch all the time. He didn't.
Yeah.
There was no other guy like Batista that lasted what 3 to 4 months. Randy Orton that lasted over three to four months too.
I think they had to force that out, Batista off of Raw. I think that really forced Batista off of Raw.
because of that storyline. Yeah. Was before that dream, I think that could have gone on for like, oh my god.
Well, but I also think it's because Cena was becoming a star and they wanted him on Raw. I think it was those two things.
So I would say he's overhyped more than overrated. I guess.
Right. I'll say he's overrated. I think he's a smart guy. I mean, he's proven it now because NXT is better than Raw and SmackDown. And that's his baby. So obviously he knows what the fuck he's doing. But he has had creative projects that have failed. If you think about Curtis Axel was a Triple H guy. How well did he do? The original Sin Cara was a Triple H guy. Triple H brought him in from Mexico, big signing. How well did the original Sin Cara go over? Like a fart in church. You know, he brought over Hideo Itami. You know, how well did that go? He's had some failures creativity-wise. And I think he could be overrated in that aspect. I do think he's got his finger on the pulse more than Vince at this point.
Yeah, obviously,
I mean, he knows what the fans want to a point. You know, and he's proven that with NXT. But
all right, so let me ask you guys this. Daniel, you said you watched NXT, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Clinith and Eric, did you guys watch NXT this week?
This is going to be the first time I actually was playing back and forth, watching AEW and NXT. So I did see parts of it. I did see the beginning.
Okay, so NXT this week, NXT did a huge jump in the ratings. You know, last week they only had 500 and something thousand viewers. This week they had 813,000 viewers. So
yeah,
they jumped up 2.5. They jumped up like 200 something thousand viewers. Almost 300.
I'm assuming it's because
right?
they were waiting for Invasion.
Right. But the fact is that now people are watching, and people got to see a pretty good episode wrestling-wise and storytelling-wise of NXT. You look at, you know, Daniel brought up earlier, Pete Dunne and Damian Priest and what they did. You know, the women, you know, showcasing themselves. The six-man with AJ and his bald-headed goofs versus Ciampa and Keith Lee and the pothead. Dominic Dijakovic and Isaiah Swerve Scott, and they had a really good match. Tony Nese and Angel Garza, they had a really good match, except for, you know, when Tony Nese power bombed Garza's pants. Which was a real fucking thing, by the way. He went to powerbomb Garza. Garza's pants fell off, so Nice powerbombed the pants. But it was a really good episode of the show, and they told a great story. And Triple H is good at telling a story because right now he's working with guys. Now, there's a few guys in NXT I don't like. Right, because I think they're overrated. Right, one of those guys I absolutely cannot stand is Kyle O'Reilly.
Yeah.
All right, I think Kyle O'Reilly is horseshit. All right. And another guy I don't like, and everybody can roast me for this, and Bruce Pritchard, if you want to come after me, you fat fuck, go ahead. I don't like Matt Riddle.
Oh, my God.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Right?
I had a feeling you were going to say that.
All right? I don't like Matt Riddle. I don't see the hype. Yeah, he's RVD 2.0.
He's a discount RVD, bro.
Exactly. He probably doesn't even smoke the good weed.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, God, Doug.
I like Kyle O'Reilly. I think he's pretty good. But,
I like
Riddle.
Kyle O'Reilly, too.
I almost thought
you were going to say Tampa.
I like Tommaso Ciampa.
Yeah, he's good.
Who doesn't? Tampa's awesome.
I think
Tommaso Ciampa's great.
Yeah.
But no, I don't like Kyle O'Reilly, and I don't like Matt Riddle.
Well, Matt Riddle and Keith Lee is RVD and Mark Henry for the new generation. But
Keith Lee, I swear to God, that guy's always got a smile on his face, but he's always smiling like he butt-fucked a buffet.
Doug. You're funny today.
All right, so final thoughts on Triple H as we wrap up here. Clintus.
This is final thoughts for part one.
Yeah, so
get into his deeper career.
Okay, so I will say if you're thinking about beginning of the career, I will think as a good mid-carder. I think Triple H was always a good mid-card, like, type of wrestler. Let's put it that way. You put on great matches, start-wise. So I will just say, great mid-carder. Yeah, I'll just leave it like that.
Eric?
Yeah, when I first saw him, I thought he was always going to be a mid-carder to maybe lower mid-carder to mid-carder, never in the main event. So, I mean, would he have got his chance if Shawn Michaels didn't retire? Or would he have still been the sidekick, the right-hand man?
I think we can answer that after our next breakdown.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Dougie.
Okay, first of all, I think that if he was going to break anybody's neck with the pedigree, it should have been Buck Zumhoff's. But as far as his career goes, he was somebody that got brought in, and he gets brought in. He works with these guys that are just characters. Or, you know, if you look at the guy that he had his very first match on Raw with, it was a guy with a lack of character. But he works with all these characters, but he finds a way to actually get good matches out of them. He got a good match out of Bob Holly. He got a good match out of Henry Godwin. The match with Drosy really was not that bad. It was a decent wrestling match, even though Drosy, was no, amateur wrestler, or he was not a classic wrestler. But he was able to get himself over even with the guys he had to work with. So he was a good mid-card heel.
I agree. My final thoughts would probably, my final thoughts would probably be, I mean, probably somebody you would rather have as your friend than your enemy, right? We always hear stories, because we didn't really touch on this. We hear stories about how Shawn Michaels was bad in the pills, especially around that time, and Triple H would literally get him dressed and carry him to the ring. So, a loyal friend, and I'd say the potential was there. You guys say Mick Carter. Yeah, he was a Mick Carter back then. But I'd say the potential was there. And we'll get into how he reached his potential next week. But don't forget to listen to Wrestling With Reality, Dirt Sheet Dudes. And I don't know if there's anything you guys want to say. I'm good for this week.
Yep.
Well, you could say this. you could say Triple H fluffed Shawn Michaels' pillow in more ways than one.
All right. Well, we'll see you guys next week. Clint, it's always a pleasure.
Yep.
Eric, Doug.
Clint.
Now,
yep.
Next
Clint,
Saturday.
Are you good for next Saturday, Clint?
What time? Next Saturday. Are you going to start 9:30?
What time are you done work?
10.
Well, I'll be done at 9 next Saturday. So
okay, 9:30. Yeah, 9:30 comes in. 9:30. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Works for
Thank
me.
You guys.
All right, guys. That was another episode of Unscripted Wrestling. We'll see you guys next week.
Adios.
Later.
Adios.
Later.
Behold the King. The King of Kings. On your knees, dog. From the place where the traitor lost both his name and his face. Through the halls and the corridors, sinking in blood, he tasted his grin, and it tasted good. The king shook his head, left him broken and dead. King of Kings!